I joined up immediately. And the moving spirits at that time were, as far as I remember, Mrs. Leonora Cohen, who is now 103, and Frank Rutter. Frank Rutter became a very famous art critic, art historian, and his wife was a, I think she came from Australia. Anyhow, they were both very keen on women's suffrage, and they took an active part, and their house was often used as a meeting place. They were vegetarians, which made it more interesting still. And I began addressing meetings on behalf of the Women's Social and Political Unions on a bit called Woodhouse Moor.
Oh, yes.
On a Sunday evening, there were a large crowd, all expecting something to happen. That was, I'm sure, that's why they came, not to listen to the message, but to see something spectacular, something exciting, for the days of television, etc. Anyhow, we held these meetings, and then some of us wished to be more positive, more active and more aggressive, and indeed we were inclined to be militant, and indeed we did become militant, a muted sort of militancy, although at one stage it reached a very alarming, proportions, but I'll come to that later. But the muted militancy was, of course, going to theatres and restaurants and cafes and public places and proclaiming the message by means of interruption, disruption. For example, we one Saturday night we went to one of the largest restaurants in Leeds, and we placed people at strategic points, and the policy was varying. On occasions, we're all to rise together at a certain signal and make a noise or proclaim something. On other occasions, it was that one would get up and do his or her piece, and then when he or she had been removed, then number two would come into being, then number three, number four, and so on. By that means, we prolonged the agony as well as the ecstasy. But on one occasion, when we tried these tactics, we were caught out. The police knew beforehand what was happening. And the result was that they were there in numbers, as we were, and soon put an end to our little campaign, which made us think that in our ranks there were the usual spies. Now, we couldn't look to anyone, we couldn't think of anyone who would be a spy. I suppose everyone was more or less under suspicion, but there it was. Now, a section of the movement became extra-militant, and among other things, we planned to burn down Harwood Hall. Laura mentioned this.
Yes, she has, yes. Yes, carry on.
Planned to burn down Harwood Hall. And I was one of the active members of the committee. We appointed, as it were, an ad hoc committee for this purpose. It was a small committee, a committee for action. And we're all young people except, say, Mrs. Cohen, and one or two others. But on this committee was a young woman, a very attractive young woman. All I know was her name was Kitty. She was about 22, I was 21. And we were the youngest members of the committee, and we became, as it were, naturally attracted to each other. And I knew nothing about her. She spoke in refined tones, and she dressed elegantly and very good looking, most attractive. And I was, I suppose, had a certain amount of attraction, I suppose, as much. Anyhow, we had these meetings, planning to burn down Harwood Hall because of some speech. As one who resided, I'm not sure, I can't... It was worth checking, but... Lord Clarencarn had made a speech, most derogatory of women in general, in relation to votes for women. Really outrageous. And I went to Great Harwood as a journalist to interview the women of Great Harwood to ask what did they think of Lord Clarencarn's views of them as a sex. They don't refuse to speak, I don't blame them really. They refuse to make any comment. Anyhow, we thought we'd teach him a lesson. And we planned to burn down the hall. We had the cars were not, as they are today, they were very scarce. We managed to have a car and two motorbikes, I think it was. And we drew all the plans. And so we went round Harwood Hall, the exterior, sort of getting the layout. We got all perfectly arranged. And then, towards the end of these meetings, as a prelude to the actual burning down of the hall, or setting fire to it, this girl, Kitty, became, I thought, very interested in all we were doing. And was sort of urging us on. It didn't occur to me about being a spy or a Jean Provocateur or whatever. Anyhow, something told me to take a course of action, and I did. After the meeting, I followed her. See, I didn't know where she lived. I wanted to find out more about her. And I followed her, followed her home. Then I found that her home was Leeds Police Corps, turned at the police station. Well, that was shattering. In a way, it was shattering. So I immediately got in touch with the officials of this committee, or all the committee, as a matter of fact, told them what I'd seen, we destroyed everything we had. Everything. There was nothing but her word, if it came to anything, and our word. Well, we never, I mean, obviously, Great Harwood Hall was out, and there was no trace of what we'd done or said or anything, and we never heard from the police. If we'd got, probably that night, they might have raided us, or the next morning, or something like that. Anyhow, there was no raid, but there's no doubt that that woman was the informer, and then from her they'd built up dossiers about certain people. Mrs. Curry, myself, and other people, I forget the names of the others, Mrs. Curry, myself, and Frank Rutter, of course. And Frank Rutter, as the curator of a Leeds art gallery, is the most vulnerable. Most vulnerable. Anyhow, we heard nothing else, but there were local prosecutions for disturbing the peace, etc., etc. And then he continued, of course, a sort of muted militancy campaign. Now, all this very exciting, these exciting happenings naturally interested students of Leeds University. And they came in droves, so to speak, to help. And our house, we had a house in Hobingham Terrace, Air Hills Lane, Leeds. That house became a headquarters for the university militants. And I told them, everything was sworn to secrecy. I told them what we discovered. And they assured us that everything was all right. They were keen, enthusiastic, both sexes. And their main interest, really, was destroying the males. And they came along with all sorts of suggestions, ideas, and materials, which they got from some part of the varsity, and corrosive fluid, powders. I don't know, I couldn't tell you exactly what it was. Anyhow, these were indeed poured into letterboxes for destroying the mail. And of course that meant further publicity. We were gaining the publicity, that was what they wanted, as you'll appreciate, not to destroy the mails as such. Publicity was the sole aim. Education had failed, that was a general consensus. Now we must throw bricks through windows, knock down cabinet ministers, or destroy the mails. The only proposal, they put forward a proposal which I scotched, I thought it was too dangerous. What they wanted on one occasion was to pour petrol, a lot of petrol, into a pillar box. Then with a long fuse, so it takes some time to run up, to explode it. I thought the result would be most devastating. I said I couldn't subscribe to that. There was no possible means of escape for anybody. Anybody who was passing or absolutely devastating. You couldn't calculate it. So I scotched that. But for that I'm certain some of those students who are so hot-headed and so keen, and regardless of the consequences, they determined to do something really spectacular. Anyhow, we carried on with this muted militancy, as I keep calling it, and time came when I had to leave Leeds and to go to Chorley, in Lancashire, where I got I became working editor. I was about 22 or 23. I looked rather good. I'd started knowing nothing about 18 or 19, and now working editor at 22 or 23. I thought that's grand going.
What newspaper was it? Pardon? Which newspaper at Chorley was
Chorley
it?
The Chorley Guardian.
Oh, yes.
Chorley Guardian. Mm. But I only got the job because I said I was older than I really was. I had to tell a lie. They didn't want, if I'd gone and said I'm 23, or 20 or 23, they wouldn't have looked at me. Because I said I was 28 or something like that, they thought, oh, I must know something. They found out eventually, admitted that I was justified. However, I went to Chorley. That was before the war. Clogs and shawl, very rough, very tough. There was no Vote for Women organisation there. No, the working women weren't interested. But there was a very active Labour Party and independent Labour Party. Small, but very active. We were a conservative newspaper, but regardless of that, I joined up. So I thought we had nothing to do with my politics. I worked for them as a journalist. I joined up, and as you probably know, women's votes, or votes for women, were part and parcel of the ILP policy.
Yeah.
And therefore they saw no point in making it a separate item of propaganda.
That was adult suffrage they favoured, wasn't it? They favoured adult suffrage.
Adult suffrage.
Yes, yes.
There was no point in separate propaganda. And so I worked there with the Labour Party and the ILP in the general way, you see, but always with this women's question in mind, adult suffrage. And
the war must have been coming just about
then. Then came the war, and of course all that stopped. And this is hardly relevant, but about when the war started, my age was revealed. So everybody had to give their age. That was when the trouble started. Well, they admitted I was all right. Then the proprietor came in one day and said, "I've heard at the town hall that you're a socialist." I said, "Yes, I am. Why?" He said, "Well, we're a conservative newspaper." So what's that to do with it? So you go into the printing works and ask the printers, if they're all conservatives, ask the proofreader, ask everybody and click with the firm for conservatives, you'll find the answer is no. And that's my answer. I'm not a conservative. I work for you as a journalist. If I give you satisfaction, which apparently I do, and they said they did, and I said, well, that's the end of it. So I never interfered with me anymore. Mm. Well, then, I went to the war, and I came back in a poor state of health, and I thought I could never go back to journalism. Is this all
yeah, oh, marvellous.
I
yes,
thought I could never go back to journalism. Mm. And I wondered what to do.
Mm-hmm. Let's put that. So you went, was this when you went to London?
No, I don't know what to do. Absolutely, I had typhoid, among other things. I drank water which the Germans had poisoned, and I had typhoid. I went all white, I lost all my hair and so on. And I went, what to do? And someone suggested, why not become a school teacher? That's an